Okay, let's see here, recording. Okay, so first of all, I brought all the exams from midterm one, midterm two that I have in my possession. I have them up front here today, so if you haven't collected your first two exams, you can pick them up after lecture today. What I plan to do today is just go through the last three problems on the practice exam. These problems deal with material that we haven't, that were not touched upon in the first two exams, so you should pay attention today. There'll be problems very much like this on the final exam. And what we're dealing with here is actually I don't have any explicit problems on, I'm not planning any specific problems on the final exam involving determinants, because calculation of the determinants anyway is the first step in actually finding eigenvectors and eigenvalues. And so what the last three problems on the exam are going to deal with for the most part is finding eigenvectors and eigenvalues, and also this business of orthogonal decompositions with respect to a subspace. Okay, so let me start asking if there are any questions on what we covered so far. Okay, so let me step through these problems. I'll try to work them out directly on the practice exam. So you see you have plenty of room to answer these questions and maybe design your responses on the actual exam following my examples here. So we'll begin with is problem eight, where we're given a 3x3 matrix, and we're here it is, 1 1 0 0 0 1 0 0 1, and we're asked to find the eigenvectors and eigenvalues of that matrix. Okay, so the way you do that is, first of all, you need to find the eigenvalues. And that's done by calculating the characteristic polynomial, which is the determinant of the matrix you get by subtracting from your given matrix a parameter lambda along that main diagonal. What we'll get here is 1 minus lambda, 1, 0, 0, 0 minus lambda, or simply negative lambda, 1. Sorry, you can't hear me? Is it? All right, so the last row here is going to be 0, 0, 1 minus lambda. Okay, so first thing we need to do is calculate that determinant. It's going to give us a polynomial in lambda whose roots, that is solutions of PA of lambda equal to zero, those are going to give us exactly our eigenvalues. So we have to take a determinant of a 3x3 matrix. Notice that in this last row, we only have one non-zero entry. So an ideal strategy for calculating the determinants is just do a cofactor expansion along that last row. So that would be equal to, well, zero from that first term, zero from the second term, and then we have a third entry, one minus lambda. We have a sine, minus one, that power minus one is raised to the sum of the row index and column index of this item we're looking at here. So that's going to be 3 plus 3. And then we have the determinant of the corresponding minor, which is the smaller matrix I get by deleting the row and column that contain that 3, 3 entry. That's going to be 1 minus lambda, 1, 0, minus lambda. And then, let's see, we'll have factor of 1 minus lambda. This is ends up being minus 1 to an even power, so that will just be a factor of 1. And then this 2x2 matrix, its determinant is simply going to be 1 minus lambda times lambda, because it's an upper triangular matrix. And for those matrices, the determinant is just the product along the main diagonal. Okay, and so right away, we see we have two eigenvalues. One of these factors has to equal zero if the characteristic polynomial is going to equal zero. So either lambda has to equal zero or lambda equals one. Those are our two eigenvalues. And now what we'll do is for each eigenspace, we'll find a corresponding basis vector. So for the eigenspace E0, this is going to be a zero eigenspace. And the way you calculate it is you find the solution set of the linear equation where you use A minus zero times I. So that's the eigenvalue we're looking at. And that's just going to be the null space of A, right? Because we're subtracting nothing from the main diagonal. And that's going to be the null space of, let's see, our matrix is 1, 1, 0, 0, 0, 1. And I may as well, you notice the second and third row are exactly the same. When you calculate the null space, what you're looking for is the reduced row echelon form of your coefficient matrix. Well, I might as well just observe that the first thing I would do to row reduce this guy to row echelon form is I'd get rid of this pivot below the pivot in the second row. Well, I would just subtract the second row from the third. So what I'm going to write down here is, assuming I've done that row reduction, and this is the reduced row echelon form of this matrix. And now what we do is we try to find a basis for this solution set. Well, the equations are x1 plus x2 plus 0 has to equal 0. And 0 times x1, 0 times x2, 1 times x3 is going to have to equal 0. And so the equations we get are going to be x1 plus x2 is equal to 0, and x3 is equal to 0. That third row doesn't tell us much. It just tells us that 0 is equal to 0. Next, what we do is we look again at that matrix in reduced row echelon form, and we observe that the second column here, sorry, let me move the paper up, that second column does not contain a pivot. That's going to mean x2 is a free parameter. So I'll take the free parameter in this equation, and I'll move it to the opposite side. We get x1 is equal to minus x2, and this is free. And x3 is a fixed variable. It has to equal 0. And then from these, you see that your solution vector, well, the first component's got to be minus x2. Second component will be x2. Third component has to be 0. So that's simply some constant times the vector minus 1, 1, 0. And that constant vector that's being multiplied by the free parameter, that's your eigenvector. So corresponding to the eigenvalue lambda equals 0, we're going to have the eigenvector minus 1, 1, 0. That takes care of the first eigenvalue. We have a second eigenvalue for which we have to do a similar computation. So now we'll look at the E1 eigenspace. Let me move this up. It's going to be the null space of the matrix I get when I subtract the eigenvalue 1 from A. So let's look at A. When I subtract 1 from the diagonal elements of A minus I, that's going to be the null space of the matrix. Let's see, it's going to be 0, 1, 0, 0, minus 1, 1, and 0, 0, 0, which is the same, at least that null space is the same as the row echelon form of this matrix. You can see pretty pretty clearly what that's going to be is, I can eliminate that. It's just going to be the null space of 0, 1, 0, 0, 0, 1, 0, 0, 0. So upon row reduction, this matrix becomes this. And from that, you can see that what you require of your solutions is that x2 has to equal 0, x3 equals 0, x1, there's no pivot in that column, so x1 is free. And so your solution variable, since the last two components, your solution vector, since the last two components have to equal 0, it's just going to be some multiple of the first standard basis vector. And so your eigenvalue, your eigenvector for the eigenvalue lambda equals 1, is just going to be that 1, 0, 0. Okay, any questions on that?
I think the first part when we do solve for the eigenvector is 0, or eigenvalue is equal to 0.
Yeah.
So x3 is a free variable, or is x3 equal to 0?
Well, so x3 is, there's a pivot in that column. Where is it? Here. You see, here, this is the reduced row echelon form of that matrix. And here in that third column, you have a pivot. And so x3 is going to be set equal to 0. So it's no longer free. What happens is when you have a pivot, you have a first non-zero entry. And that means you can take the corresponding variable and you'll be able to solve for that. But the other variables that might occur in the equation, they're necessarily going to be free until you move those to the other side of the equation. So for this row, it simply says x3 is equal to 0. It's not a free variable.
If there was a free variable in there,
if there were a free variable corresponding x3, there would have to be another non-zero entry in that row. So you'd have, you only have one pivot in a row because you've now reduced everything to row echelon form. So you only, if you have a non-zero pivot, then you have other non-zero entries. They can't live in columns that have pivots. And so the first entry is always going to be the thing you can solve for, and the variables corresponding to other entries in a row when the matrix is in reduced row echelon form, they're going to correspond automatically to free variables, and you just push them to the other side. That way, you always have one variable you can solve for each row. It'll be the first variable. That's the one you can solve for, and the other ones are going to be free.
And there isn't one, then we'll end up like a situation where the eigenvector.
Well, you work it out, and you the number of columns about pivots is going to give you the number of free parameters, and that's going to give you the number of free parameters is going to give you the dimension of this space. So in this example, we only had one column without a pivot. So we only have one free parameter, and that's why our eigenspace is one-dimensional. It's basically the solution set of the linear system you have using that as the coefficient matrix. Okay? Okay, so, there's a second part to this question, but we can answer it fairly easily. In part B, the question is this matrix diagonalizable? And the next problem will actually diagonalize a matrix, but we can answer this question already. What we need to diagonalize a 3x3 matrix are three linearly independent eigenvectors. How many have we found? Well, we found one linearly independent eigenvector for the eigenvalue 0, and we found, so that's this guy, and then we found one linearly independent eigenvector for the eigenvalue 1, but we don't have any more eigenvalues, and so the maximum number of linearly independent eigenvectors we found is 2. We need 3 for a 3x3 matrix in order to diagonalize it. So the answer to B is no. We don't have enough linearly independent eigenvectors. We don't have 3 linearly independent eigenvectors, so we cannot diagonalize this 3x3 matrix. Okay. Let's do another one. In problem 9, I'm giving you a matrix that will be diagonalizable, and I just want you to diagonalize it. Find, sorry, taking it off the screen here. I want you to find matrices C and a diagonal matrix D such that C the minus first times A times C is a diagonal matrix. Now, the way you solve that is you solve the eigenvector, first solve the eigenvector eigenvalue problem for the given matrix A. Then what you'll do is that so long as you have two linearly independent eigenvectors, you can construct an invertible matrix C. And C has to be invertible. You can construct this matrix using two linearly independent eigenvectors for the original matrix A. And then the diagonal elements of this diagonal matrix D are just going to be the eigenvalues corresponding to the eigenvectors you use to construct C. So let's begin by solve the eigenvector eigenvalue problem for the given matrix. So that means we look at PA of lambda equals the determinant of minus 1 minus lambda, 5, 1, 3 minus lambda. That determinant is going to be the characteristic polynomial for the given matrix. And what it's going to be is it looks like minus 1 minus lambda times 3 minus lambda minus 5. So that's going to be, let's see, negative 3. Cross terms are minus 3 plus 1, look like minus 2 lambda. And then plus lambda squared minus 5, which I guess is that's going to be lambda squared minus 2 lambda minus 8, which now I can factorize is lambda minus 4 times lambda plus 2. All right, so after I computed it, I had a polynomial I had to actually simplify a little bit. But then once I get it in its standard form, it's pretty easy to factorize. You have two factors, 2 and 4 of 8, and you can actually arrange for their cross terms to produce this minus 2 pretty easily. And so what we have are two eigenvalues. Lambda equal to 4 and lambda equal to negative 2. By the way, knowing the eigenvalues, I already know what that diagonal matrix has to be. It will be 4, 0, 0, negative 2. I just used the eigenvalues I found, and that will give me the matrix. What we have to figure out is that matrix C, and that's going to be determined once we figure out the eigenvectors for each of these eigenvalues. So for lambda equal to 4, that corresponding eigenspace is going to be the null space of the matrix you get by subtracting 4 from the diagonal elements of the original matrix A. So minus 1 minus 4 is going to be negative 5. Then we have 5, and then we have 1. Three minus four is going to be negative one. And it's pretty clear that both these rows become minus 1, 0, 0. All right, so I've looked at this matrix and I see that both rows are proportional to 1, -1. This one is just minus 5 times the second row. So this one's going to simplify to this reduced row echelon form. And from that, one thing to point out. I've mentioned this before. In this example of a computation of the null of an eigenspace, we had a zero row at the bottom of the matrix of our row echelon form. Notice that also occurred previously, when we were calculating the eigenspace for the zero eigenspace in the preceding problem and the one eigenspace in the preceding problem, we always had a zero row. That's That's actually a consequence of this, of setting this determinant equal to zero. You're guaranteeing that the matrix is not going to be row reducible to the identity matrix when you subtract an eigenvalue from those diagonal elements. So think of this zero row as a confirmation that your calculation is proceeding as expected. All right, now, this is the coefficient matrix of a linear system in reduced row echelon form. We convert back to equations to get the equations of the solution. That first row says x1 minus x2 has to equal zero. Second row says zero has to equal zero. And from this, we see that a solution vector, well, x2 is going to be a free parameter, and x1 can be expressed in terms of x2. What you're going to get is simply this vector, 1, 1. So let me show you quickly here. If you have x1 minus x2 is equal to 0 and 0 is equal to 0, this is free because it's the second variable that occurs in the equation corresponding to a row of a reduced row echelon form. So that tells me x1 is equal to x2. Second equation doesn't tell me anything. So my solution variable, solution vector, is going to look like x2, x2, or simply x2 times 1, 1. All right, so I hope this calculation, these sort of going from the equations coming from the matrix in reduced row echelon form to the corresponding basis vectors, I'm hoping we've done this enough times that this is sort of straightforward. But if not, here's the short calculation that allows me to go from this coefficient matrix in reduced row echelon form to the basis vector for the solution set. So actually it's x2. Any constant times this vector is going to be a solution of this matrix, well, a linear system with that guy as the coefficient matrix. So the upshot of this is for the eigenvector corresponding to lambda equal 4, we have this vector 1, 1. All right, we have a second eigenvalue, lambda equal negative 2, and so we'll calculate also its eigenspace. That's going to be the null space of, well, so now what I'll do is I'll substitute negative 2 for lambda and basically calculate the null space of the corresponding matrix. So when lambda is equal to negative 2, what we're going to get is, looks like minus 3 when I, oh, sorry, it'll be plus 1. When I subtract negative 2 from negative 1, I'm going to get plus 1, 5, 1, and then 3 minus a negative 2 is going to be 5. Ah, so, and that's going to row reduce real quickly to 1, 5, 0, 0. Good. Again, you got that zero row, which is a good check that our calculation is proceeding as it should. Now we write down the equations corresponding to that coefficient matrix in reduced row echelon form. Basically going to tell us that x1 is equal to minus x minus 5 times x2. When I take this to the opposite side, that's where I pick up the minus sign. And so the solution vector in this case is going to be minus 5, 1 times a free parameter x2. And so the eigenvector corresponding to the eigenvalue minus 2 is going to be minus 5, 1. All right, and now we're in a position to write down the matrix C that was going to diagonalize A. I've already written down the diagonal matrix D that A gets converted into. To write down the matrix C, what I have to do is write down the corresponding eigenvectors in the same order that I wrote these eigenvalues. So the first eigenvalue was 4, and its eigenvector was 1, 1. And then the second eigenvalue was negative 2. It's corresponding that guy, so the second eigenvector we'll use is minus 5, 1. All right, and then I put a box around D and C. I've answered the problem. I found the 2x2 matrix C and a diagonal matrix D such that this identity is automatic. Okay, so to solve the diagonalization problems, you have to find both the eigenvalues and the eigenvectors. The eigenvalues go into this matrix D, and all they are, it's going to be a diagonal element, and you just list your eigenvalues in order along that main diagonal.
When you say order, like—
Well, you choose some order. It could have been minus two, could have been minus two, four, or four minus two. But if you chose a different order here, you'd have to switch these columns. So the important thing is to correlate the eigenvalues with their eigenvectors.
And what would be the difference
if it was 3x3? A longer calculation, but it'd be exactly the same.
You would put the same, like,
yeah, you would pick some ordering. You would pick some ordering of the eigenvalues, and then write it down a diagonal matrix. And then when you try to construct the matrix C, just make the first diagonal, the first column is going to be the eigenvector corresponding to the first diagonal entry. Okay, let's see. We have one last problem to do, and this is going to deal with orthogonal decompositions. And I like these problems because they really, there's a sort of a geometric intuition to them, but that geometric intuition isn't that very helpful in actually getting to the solution to it. Rather, in order to solve problem 10, you have to understand both the notions of subspaces and bases and what they're good for. So the way one solves these problems where you need to decompose a given vector with respect to a subspace is you need to find bases for the subspace, and you also need to find, and in doing so, you'll get this piece automatically. This piece is basically going to come from knowledge of the basis for this space. And this this piece here comes from knowledge of a different subspace, but it's the set of vectors that are perpendicular to every vector in W. So the first thing to note is that these two vectors are obviously linearly independent. So note that the vectors 1, 1, 0, and 0, 1, 1 are a basis for W. Now, the reason I can tell that, simply by inspection, is that this vector has a component that can't be canceled with the other vector. And similarly, this vector has a component that can't be canceled with a contribution from this. So if I had a linear combination of these guys and that was to equal zero, I'd have to take the coefficient of C2 is equal to zero. But then I wouldn't be able to, I couldn't cancel this guy without setting whatever's multiplying this vector equal to zero. And similarly, I couldn't cancel the third component without taking the multiple of the second vector equal to zero. So these guys are pretty much linearly independent. Let me say, write down explicitly what I'm saying here. If V1 and V2 are linearly independent, then it means the only solution of X1 V1 plus X2 V2 equals zero is X1 equals zero and X2 is equal to zero. Now, if you look at these two vectors, x1 times 1, 1, 0 plus x2 times 0, 1, 1, that can only equal the zero vector. Well, upon calculation, we need x1 plus 2 times x0, then we'll get x1 plus x2 in the second component, and then we'll just get x2 in the last component. And you see that the only way I'm going to get zero is for that first component I have to take x1 is equal to 0. And to get the last component to equal 0, I have to take x2 is equal to 0. So the only linear combination of these two vectors that produces a 0 vector is the one where x1 and x2 are equal to 0. For that reason, the vectors are linearly independent. That sort of phenomenon you can spot whenever you have a list of vectors for which one of the vectors has a component that can't be canceled with the other vectors. Okay, so I know that the vectors given actually constitute a basis for the subspace. What we look at next is a second subspace, W. This is going to consist of all the vectors inside R3 such that X dotted with an element of W equals 0. This is going to be for all W inside our given subspace. See, what we're trying to do is we have a set of two independent directions that's capable of reaching every vector in W, but this vector doesn't live in W. We need some additional directions so that we can actually get coordinates for this vector. So what we do is we create an auxiliary subspaces. We're looking for additional directions, and the best natural way to find additional directions is to find perpendicular directions, directions that are perpendicular to everything you started off with. For example, if I wanted to build the three-dimensional space of this room, and I knew I had a basis for the blackboard, all I need is an additional direction that's perpendicular to my given two directions. Then I get a basis for the entire room. And so that's actually the purpose of this guy. It allows us to extend this basis for W to a basis for the entire vector space in which things live. All right, so what is this? This turns out to be the null space of the matrix we get by taking the basis vectors for W as rows. So 1, 1, 0, 0, 1, 1. Because if you had a bunch of row vectors and you had a column vector, x1 through xn, this matrix product would just produce b1 dotted x, b2 dotted with x, down to bk dotted with x. So this matrix product, how do you compute it? You take dot products of rows with the one and only column of the second factor. So the 1-1 component is going to be the first row times that one and only column. Second component is going to be equal to 0. So this thing evaluates this. When we write it this way, we have a linear system. And what does it say? It says that x is perpendicular to each of these vectors. And so if we're looking for a subspace of vectors that are perpendicular to every vector inside W, what we do is we write the basis vectors of W as rows, and then we think of that as defining a linear system that we can solve. So we'll calculate this null space, and what it will be, also the null space of 1, 1, 0. Let's see, the reduced row echelon form is going to be 0 minus 1, 1, 1. All right, so I quickly did the row reduction. So the way I got this matrix here is by taking my basis vectors for this subspace W and writing them as rows. That gives me a different subspace when I calculate the null space, and we can see what it's going to be. X1 has to equal X3, and X2 is going to have to equal minus X3. That's the equations I'll get from these two rows of a coefficient matrix in reduced row echelon form. And I've already identified X3 as the free parameter and put it on the right-hand side. So X, our solution vector is just going to be X3 times 1 minus 1, 1. All right, so this is the basis vector for this null space. And so it's the basis vector for W perpendicular. All right, now, the next step, I should be writing this on paper. So let's see, what we did is first, so we first find a basis for another subspace, which is defined as a set of vectors X inside R3, such that X dotted with W always equals zero for all W inside our original space. And what happened then is that that W perp is going to be the null space of the matrix we get by writing our basis vectors as rows. And that worked out to be, when all was said and done, null space 1, 1, 0, 0, 1, 1 equals the null space of 1, 0, minus 1, 0, 1, 1. And that led us to a vector, everything's proportional at x3, and it will be 1, minus 1, 1. And that, our basis vector for W perp. All right, now, the reason for constructing this auxiliary subspace W perp is actually to find this additional basis vector. Because we're working in a three-dimensional space, 1, 2, 3 dimensions, we only have a two-dimensional subspace. So we need an additional direction to actually coordinatize our three-dimensional space. What this calculation, finding a basis vector for this perpendicular subspace does, it gives us the additional direction we need. So now we have three vectors. The first two were given to us, 0, 1, 1. And now we have a third vector, 1, minus 1, 1. These are going to be three linearly independent vectors in a three-dimensional vector space, and so they provide a basis for R3. That means every three-dimensional vector can be written as a linear combination of these guys. So in particular, our given vector was, our given vector had components 1, 1, 1. So that's a three-dimensional vector, and so it can be represented as a linear combination of these three vectors. I'm going to write them vertically so you see that linear combination. 1, 1, 0 plus C2 times 0, 1, 1 plus C3 times 1, minus 1, 1. Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to figure out exactly, I'm going to figure out exactly what those numbers C1 and C2 are. So that will, C1, C2, and C3, once I figure out what those numbers are, the sum of the first two vectors, since I'm using basis vectors for W, this part it's going to live in in the subspace W, and this piece that's left over, it's going to be lie outside of W, and it will compile, it can be identified with this V perp. So how do we find those numbers C1, C2, and C3? Again, effectively we have a linear system to solve. This time it's a non-homogeneous one. We have this multiplication here, you can think of that as, I'll take each of these vectors and write them as columns, 0, 1, 1, 1, minus 1, 1, and then times the column vector C1, C2, C3. What I have is a homogeneous, non-homogeneous linear system. A constant vector is equal to a certain coefficient matrix times an unknown vector. But what we want are those components so that we can make this expansion explicit. So what we'll do is we'll solve that linear system by taking the coefficient matrix 1, 1, 1, minus 1, 0, 1, 1. Take the constant vector on the right-hand side as for the inhomogeneous term. This is the augmented matrix for that system. We'll row reduce to row echelon form, 1, 0, 1, 1. Let's see. 1 minus 1 is 0. 1 minus 0 is 1. Negative 1 minus 1 is negative 2. And 1 minus 1 is 0. And then doesn't look right. It's going okay. And then we have 0, 1, 1, and on the last column we're going to have 1, and that's going to row reduce further to 1, 0, 0, 0, 1, 0, 0, 0, 1. And last column, we end up with 2/3, 2/3, and 1/3. All right, so why was I looking at this augmented matrix? It's because I'm trying to find these coefficients C1 and C2 and C3 such that our given vector B can be expressed in terms of this compound basis, a basis for W combined with the basis for its orthogonal complement. So these first two columns correspond to a basis for W. Last column corresponds to a basis for W perp. I write those, I write the given vector as the last column, and I row reduce all the way to reduce row echelon form. And now the last step is to convert back to equations. In this case, I have the identity matrix. So that first row tells me that x1 is equal to 2/3. Second row tells me that a solution must have x2 equal to 2/3. And the third row says that the third component has to equal 1/3. So notice in this case, we have a unique solution. Well, that's appropriate, because these three vectors are basis vectors. That means that anytime you expand a vector in terms of your basis vectors, there's only one choice of coefficients that will work. What we've calculated are exactly those choices. Let's call them C1, C2, and C3, so we can interpret them in this fashion. So that means B, let me write that down here. So what we found here is that this matrix 1, 1, 0, 0, 1, 1, and 1, minus 1, 1, and then I use this matrix in the last column, or that vector in the last column, that row reduces to 1, 1, 1, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 2/3, 2/3, 1/3. All right, that was on the blackboard. And now that means that B is going to equal 2/3 times 1, 1, 0. C2 is 2/3, 2/3 times 0, 1, 1. And then the last vector has coefficient 1/3, 1, minus 1, 1. And now the sum of these two guys Oh, sorry. Here we go. So what I did, having found a basis for the entire vector space, I take the given vector and I expand it in terms of that basis. Well, to find the numbers, I have to solve another linear system, and that's done using row reduction. Once I get the solution, C1 has to equal 2/3, C2 has to equal 2/3, and C3 has to equal 1/3. I then write out the expansion, and then I note that the first two terms are constructed using basis vectors for W. So let's just write that guy down. It's going to be 2/3 in the first component. Then I'll have 4/3 in the second component. And the last component is going to be 2/3 again. So sorry, it's going off the page there. Let me show you. Because I'm just taking, I have a B itself is this entire combination of three vectors, but the first two vectors live inside W. So the first component is going to be 2/3 times 1 plus 2/3 times 0. I'm just going to get 2/3. In the second component, I have 2/3 times 1 plus 2/3 times 1. And in the last component that it's kind of falling off the page there, that's 2/3 times 0 plus 2/3 times 1 is just going to be 2/3. And then the perpendicular piece, it's just going to be this last one. So that's going to be 1/3 minus 1/3, 1/3. And then that's the orthogonal decomposition. B is equal to this vector that lives inside the original subspace W. And then there's a leftover piece, the perpendicular piece, and that's exactly that last piece. Okay, so So look carefully. There was no homework explicitly assigned on this orthogonal decomposition because it didn't really make sense to assign homework this last week. But a problem like this is going to be on the final exam. So the printed solutions that are actually posted, I tried to be explicit with my verbiage about exactly how you do this. Study those solutions and be able to repeat it. The basic idea is going to be to, first of all, find a basis for your subspace W. Then you need to find a basis for an additional subspace. That you get by taking the original set of basis vectors and writing them as rows and finding a basis for the solution set, that matrix times x is equal to 0. Then what you'll have are as many basis vectors coming from W and the perpendicular subspace that you get a basis for the entire vector space. And you then have to write your given vector in terms of that new basis for R3. You do another row reduction to get those coefficients, and then you just split your answer in half to get the VW and VPerp. Okay, so with that, I've worked out the final exam. Any questions? Okay, so I sent out an email this morning with a correction. The final exam is going to be in this room on Wednesday at 10 o'clock. And if I stated that wrong now, whatever the university schedule is, that's where we're going to have the final exam. But it's going to be Wednesday at 10 in this room. You may be right. It may be at 8 o'clock. You're right. It is at 8 o'clock. Wednesday, May 8th at 8 o'clock in 312 North Classroom Building. Okay. All right. So I'll see everyone then. Good luck studying, not only for my final, but for your others as well.
I have a question about this part. Okay. So I know a way in my brain, I don't know how to explain it, that I can get this thing right away. Can I do that, or like you will deduct the point if I didn't do it?
You have to write these guys as columns. So what happened is that first thing you calculated, you use that as the first column. Second one with the second column, third. You have to make sure they have the right orientation, or else you don't get the right matrix.
Yeah, but like if like I can do it in my, like I don't know how I do it in my brain, but I can calculate it in my brain and just get you this answer. Will you do this point because I didn't do this part? If I only gave you this right without this one.
Probably I'll understand what you're doing, but it's always safest to explain as much as possible, because that way, if you do something wrong, I can at least give you partial credit.
This part, I don't understand the English part of it. But what I understand is that we have to put a certain value, and if it's not equal to one.
So we have to test something. We have to test to make sure that if we take a vector that starts inside this set, and we multiply it by any number, that we're still living inside this set. Mm-hmm. So let's take this vector. It lives inside the set because 1 plus 0 does equal 1. Mm-hmm. So the components of this vector satisfy this condition. So W lives inside capital W.
Yeah.
Let's multiply it by 0. And what happens, you get 0. But now 0 plus 0 plus 0 equals 0. It does not equal 1.
So
this vector doesn't live inside here. Mm-hmm. But if you look back, if you look back at the definition of what it means to be a subspace, you have to, if you start off with a vector and a number and you multiply it together, you have to stay in that set. Mm-hmm. But what you found is that if you multiply this vector, even though it starts in W, after you multiply it by 0, it leaves W. So this condition is not satisfied, and so it's not a subspace.
Okay. What else? And like these, we just memorize them, right?
Just memorize them. But as you can see, knowing these things, you can, if you have a question about the thing you're working about, go back and look at the definition, and see what kind of object you're looking for.
Can you please, if like you don't mind, like I can see my homework on like web assignment, but I cannot see it in the canvas.
Well, I haven't computed it yet. Okay. But what you can do is just take your score on web assignment, figure out, get the percentage score.
Okay.
Take the percentage and just multiply that by 50. So 50 points is going to be the maximum you can get for homework in this course.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. What's your name?
James.
Sorry, last name again?
Patel.
Okay, yeah. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.